WSHA 88.9 FM. You're listening to the sounds of Bill Cunliffe and The Blues and the Abstract Truth, Take Two. The classic composition from Oliver Nelson called Stolen Moments. And we're very excited to have a chance to talk to the man who's created this CD. Bill, you on the line?
Hi, Susan. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Well, Bill, I'm so happy that you've called this evening from Los Angeles.
That's right.
From Los Angeles. And I thought I would give our listeners a little bit of background on you and your music. You are a Grammy-nominated composer, arranger, and jazz pianist. And back in the day, you were at Duke University studying with pianist Mary Lou Williams. Got your master's from Eastman School of Music, toured as a pianist and arranger with Buddy Rich, and worked with Frank Sinatra, Ray Brown, James Moody, Joshua Redman, whole list of folks here. Bill Cunliffe was the 1989 winner of the $10,000 Thelonious Monk International Jazz Piano Award, and is currently a composer in residence at in Pasadena, California, and also in Temple, at Temple on this coast.
Also, well, actually, I'm not at Temple anymore.
You're not at Temple anymore. Well, I'm sorry.
No, I moved back to I was living in Philadelphia, and I moved back to California. I'm teaching at Cal State Fullerton.
Okay, so we'll update that part. And with that, we'll jump right in here. Bill, tell us, before we get into the CD, I've just got to get back to the triangle here. Tell us about your early days in Durham and at Duke.
Well, I was not even really a music major as an undergraduate at Duke until junior year. I actually transferred to Duke from Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and I think many young people at the age of 18 or 19, they don't know what they want in more than one way. So I was just trying a whole lot of things. I was a language major for a minute, and then I was a psych major. But in between sophomore and junior year of college, I heard a friend of mine gave me an Oscar Peterson record called Tristeza on Piano, and it just lit me up like a firecracker. I was like, this is really what I want to do. So junior year at Duke, I was a music major, and I tried out for the jazz band. And the director at the time was a man named Paul Malesi, who's a very good friend of mine now. He's a pianist and a piano tuner in the Washington, D.C. area, but he was directing the Duke Jazz Band at the time. And I didn't get into the band, and I was very upset with him. And I went up to him, and I said, you know, why didn't I get in? And he said, well, you don't know the music. And I said, what do you mean I don't know the music? Because I had a few records. I had some Oscar Peterson, some Fats Waller, some Errol Garner. And he said, well, have you ever heard of Wynton Kelly? And I said, no. Have you ever heard of Bill Evans? I said, well, yeah, I heard of Bill Evans. And I said, how about, you know, Thelonious Monk? And I, well, kind of. And he said, you see, you don't know the music, so you've got to learn the music. So he gave me a list of records. I went out and got as many of them as I could. I started listening like crazy. And the next year, Mary Lou came to town, and I started studying with her, and that was it.
Wow. Wow, what a great start. that's fabulous. What would you say was Mary Lou's influence on your writing style, your music?
A number of things. Her teaching style, as you know, Susan, was more like kind of a, you watch her and then you imitate her and then you ask questions, as opposed to a formal teaching apparatus. I would just hang out with her in her office. She would play for me. I would play, and then she would just kind of give me ideas about how to get the right sound and who to listen to and important records to check out and a lot of things about voicings. You know, when my favorite comment of hers is when you play a big chord, you push the two thumbs together so they make love with each other. And she always had a very poetic way of putting things. I was very, very impressed by her ability to keep her roots and yet be very modern. And I think that I feel that's exactly the type of player I am. I love to be contemporary, to observe and to react to what's going on around me, but I can never lose that traditional thing. I'm a swinger, and I can't help it. So once you hit a certain age of life, you stop. You accept who you are, and things just get better.
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful influence.
Yeah.
Were there other musicians or anyone in particular that you would say was someone who highly affected your musical career?
Well, once I got to Eastman, there was a pianist there, Bill Dobbins, who's kind of an amazingly talented man. A great pianist, both classical and jazz, a great composer and arranger, and I don't know anyone who knows much more about jazz than Bill Dobbins. So I think at that time, that was really what I needed, because I really didn't even start to play jazz until I was 20. So, and I didn't even get into Eastman with jazz. I didn't play well enough. They said, well, you're never going to get in. But I did have pretty good grades at Duke, so I got in as a theory major. So I studied theory for a year, and I transferred to jazz as quickly as I could. But so I was really on kind of a fast track to make up for lost time, and Bill was very good with that. He was just very intense. He made me transcribe hundreds of things and analyze and listen heavily, and I think he was the next influence. At that time, there was a 50-year-old man who was also getting his master's, and his name was Dave Remington. And Dave had played trombone briefly with Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, and he was kind of a jobbing piano player, mostly in the Chicago area. And he was quite uneducated musically, but he had, this guy swung like a freight train. And he, you know, Bill would, you know, say all these things and give me all this really great information, and then Dave would be like, well, you know, this is great, but in the real world, and then he would kind of filter it through a certain kind of street persona.
Huh.
So between Dave and Bill, I got a great education. It was the, you know, going to Eastman was the best thing I ever did.
Well, clearly you learned your lessons, because winning the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Competition was certainly quite a feat.
I think I didn't really think that I played that well in that competition, but I just, you know, my mom was sick, so I needed to get back east, and I was in Ohio at the time. I was a school teacher in Cincinnati, and it was just an excuse to get back. And Monk is the kind of composer that I love his music, and it makes you better to learn it, but I sometimes am lazy and need excuses to be prodded to do things. So this was just a chance to get into Monk's music. So I just kind of took it on myself to learn a bunch of his tunes. And I think that young people don't always do their homework about learning the people that came before them. I had to, because I knew nothing and I felt really inadequate. So I think sometimes when you feel really inadequate, you work extra hard to get it together.
The CD that you've created, The Blues and the Abstract Truth, Take Two, is based on the original Oliver Nelson release and his six compositions from that. Do you recall your first time hearing this CD?
Oh, I was at Eastman. It was in Bill Dobbins' jazz styles class. And I think my favorite part of this CD, of the original, is the playing of Eric Dolphy, because the music is, I won't say conventional, but it's certainly mainstream and hip in an early 60s way. You know, he did kind of a cowboy tune with Hoedown, and he did Cascades, which is one of his kind of weird saxophone etudes. So it's all kind of the time and pretty mainstream. But then Eric Dolphy comes in and blows the roof off the place. I'm a real fan of Eric Dolphy because he was one of the musicians who could play out but was very, very well educated. He grew up in L.A. and had a great musical education and a well-rounded scholarly, brilliant guy who unfortunately died way too young. I like the freshness of the in and the out of it, and the slight I wouldn't say mismatch, but unexpected. I don't think that Roy Haynes and Bill Evans played that much together, and that's a great combo for me. I really enjoy that combo.
Just to fill in the names that are missing here, Paul Chambers is on the bass on that, George Barrow on the baritone sax, Freddie Hubbard on the trumpet, along with Oliver Nelson, Eric Dolphy, and Roy Haynes, and Bill Evans, whom you just mentioned, the septet. And speaking of dying too young, my goodness, Oliver Nelson died at age 43.
Yeah, I know people in L.A. who knew him, because that was only in the mid-70s, and they just said he was a complete pressure cooker workaholic.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because he could play every instrument, he could write, he could arrange, and he recorded a whole lot of music, but nowhere near enough, because he was also writing for television. And my friends who write for television, it's a real pressure cooker. I did some TV writing for a while, but it was music for, euphemistically, daytime dramas or soap operas. And that schedule is very leisurely. You just kind of, they want 3 minutes of light tension or 2 minutes of heavy tension or 3 minutes of solo piano, and it's fairly easy to do. It's not to picture, really, per se. It's not that challenging. The deadlines aren't as spectacular as what TV is, you know, in terms of live drama, where you have to write a whole lot of music and to picture and you know, every week.
Oliver Nelson had worked with Louis Jordan, and then, as you mentioned, he did this CD, and he also did, actually it was an album then, originally, and he wrote for TV and things such, people might recognize the Ironside, Night Gallery, Columbo, The $6 Million Man.
Right.
All kinds of things that, of course, the classic Stolen Moments, I think everybody probably recognizes that we started out the hour with. So just a real loss to have had him pass away so early. So such a star-studded cast, and obviously an early thing that you listened to. How did you come to make this remake your project?
It's really funny. Sometimes you spend years and years on things, and sometimes you just toss them off. This is one where there's a jazz promoter in L.A. named Paul Lyons, who's a wonderful guy, and he would call me. He would just call me and go, "Bill, Blues in the Abstract Truth. Can you make it happen?" And I said, "Well," I said, "Yeah, I think I probably can." He says, "Well, can you get the charts? I mean, how do you get the charts?" And I had one or two of the charts laying around, but I didn't want to have to transcribe a bunch of charts. I said, "Paul, I'll give you a whole new one. I'll just redo the album. It's only six tunes, and they're pretty basic tunes." So we set up a night. He was promoting concerts at a beautiful museum, the terrace of a museum in Pasadena, California, outside of L.A., and I just kind of redid the charts. Oh, I think I did the whole thing in about 3-4 days.
Wow.
Just the six charts, and then we did a couple other Oliver Nelson tunes, and I assembled a cast of really good players, and we did it, and it was fun. Then about a year later, I did it again at another club in L.A., and the recording engineer called me a few months later. His name is George Clavin, and George had started a record label. George also is a health food sales distributor, so that's where he makes his money. And he said, "Bill, I really like that record we did, that tape we did at the club. I want to put it out." And I said, and I had a copy, and I listened to it, and I said, "You know, it's pretty good, but I don't think it's good enough to release. I think we should do it right. This is too important." So he said, "Okay," and I assembled the players, and we did it again.
Any particular reason why you decided to substitute Barry Sachs with trombone?
Well, I think, you know, my Latin record and my sextet, two sextet records I did before that, I always had trombone. And I know there's so many great trombone players in L.A. I could have done it on baritone. It would have been just fine. But it's a different color, you know. Mm-hmm. No particular particular reason. It just kind of made sense. I just knew more guys that I could call that were, you know, trombone specialists and could do a good job. There aren't that many guys in L.A. that specialize on the baritone. Hmm. Most of the baritone players are guys who play all kinds of instruments.
It was great that you were able to get Terrell Stafford on the trumpet.
Yeah, well, I taught, like I said, I lived in Philadelphia and taught for 3 years at Temple. So he's really about my favorite trumpet player. And I was listening to some Freddie Hubbard today on the radio, and it really strikes me that the spirit of Freddie Hubbard coming through today, I think, you think of Roy Hargrove, you think of Terrell Stafford, those are kind of the two guys for me that really do that. You know, not really sound like Freddie, but have that spirit, that eighth note energy and that big, big sound and everything. And I just love Terrell. I just love what he does, and I just want him to be involved.
Hmm. I wonder, we started out tonight with, started the whole show tonight with Hoedown, and a couple weeks ago we played Hoedown back-to-back, your version and the original version. And I wonder if you can describe for the audience in a way for non-musicians to understand how you updated the sound, how you altered the harmonics and the rhythm and things to contemporize this.
Well, let me see. If I play piano here, does it come over the radio? Let me try this.
Can you
hear that?
Does
that work at all?
Yeah, I can hear that.
Okay. So Oliver goes. Which, in a way, is kind of he's poking fun at the kind of 2-3 chord aspect of country music. Because then he goes into, you know, that thing. He goes into all the Oliver Nelson patterns after that. So it's kind of an exercise in this kind of really funny, naive country. So that's kind of a little musical joke. But I wanted to do a bit of a different musical joke. When I was a kid, I loved, and I still do, I loved David Sanborn and Tom Scott. And there's an New York, what's it called? The Big Apple or something. It's a Tom Scott record with this piano player named Richard T. And I was a very big fan of Richard T because his kind of claim to fame is gospel imported kind of into jazz and pop. So instead of, he goes, so that, you know, it's like a black gospel church vibe on Hoedown, which I thought was really kind of interesting. So harmonically, it's a little more a chord rather than a chord with the bass note underneath. You have a chord with the wrong bass note underneath. And then you keep going in a wedge figure going inwards. And that's kind of how that stuff. I love that type of music. I'm way into, like, early 20th century music, and Gershwin and Sergei Prokofiev, they do things like that all the time. But that's a real Richard T. gospel piano figure, and then you just make a few of the notes funnier, and it becomes this other thing.
That's great. That's great. For anyone who's just tuned in, you're listening to WSHA 88.9 FM in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we are talking with pianist, composer, and arranger Bill Conliffe about his new CD called The Blues and the Abstract Truth, Take Two, which is out on Resonance Records. Well, that's wonderful to hear those examples, because trying to help people to understand how you've updated that sound harmonically and such, it does sound contemporary, and why is sometimes helpful for people to hear. Obviously, you're also talking about the different colors. It's another term that we use. I don't know if there's an explanation that goes with that's sort of a more basic.
Yeah, the colors are, I think that harmonic changes like what I did and rhythmic things create a different aura, rather than ba 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 da 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 da. I go ba doo bang dang doo dang dang doo dang dang doo dang. So those things are things that people, you don't really need to understand or even know about the harmony. The rhythmic things of this record kind of set it off, because Blues in the Abstract Truth is a record about the blues and I Got Rhythm Changes, which are kind of the two most popular and basic forms that jazz musicians use. And so the last two tunes on the album, which are my originals, one is a blues and one is a rhythm changes tune. So I thought these tunes would fit right away into that album. The one problem with the Blues in the Abstract Truth album, it's not a problem really, but it's short. It's only 36 minutes.
Right, right.
Now that I listen to mine, you know, you always have second thoughts. Now that I listen to mine, I would have had a little more blowing. I would have had the thing go a little longer. Because it still only clocks out at 41 and change. It's still pretty short. That being said, I'm a big fan of 40, 50-minute records. I'm not a fan of 70-minute records. I mean, I have to take those in a couple of swoops. I can't sit down and listen to 70 minutes of music unless it's, you know, Mahler or Beethoven or something.
Arranging versus composing, I think some people don't always understand how important that can be. And clearly you have given a new dimension and new life to these already classic compositions and arrangements. Certainly when one hears the new sounds you've come up with, it's definitely something new.
Well, thank you, Susan. It was really fun to do.
I'll bet.
To get together with guys like this and do a record and do it right, you know.
We should tell people that if they're interested in finding out more about your music, they should go to...
www.billcunliffe.com. And a whole lot of my records are also available on CD Baby. You just go in there and type in my name and they come
up. Okay, and just so people know, Cunliffe is spelled C-U-N-L-I-F-F-E. Bill Cunliffe.
Right.
So you said that you're done with your Philly stint, so you're pretty much staying out in California at this time.
Yeah, I come back to L.A. a lot. To New York. I just love New York, and I have some relationships with some musicians there that I really cherish. We just had Dick Oates, the great alto player, out here, and I've got a gig coming up at the Jazz Standard in New York in April, and I'm hoping Dick can make it, and some of my favorite York musician. So I go to New York as much as I can, but for right now, LA's home. It's a pretty nice place. If you can find musically enough to satisfy you, it's really great.
So do you perceive a lot of difference in the opportunities between the West Coast and East Coast, or just really the New York scene versus anywhere else?
I think the latter is certainly true. I think the New York scene is uniquely great and creative. If all I want to do was play, I think I would have just stayed there. But I love writing and arranging, and I love that equally to playing. So, you know, in L.A. there are great musicians you can write for and some opportunities to compose and all that. So L.A.'s pretty good, too, but nothing is like New York.
So now that you've done the Blues and the Abstract Truth, what's your next project?
Well, we're just finishing with that same label a very interesting project with a pianist named Marian Petrescu, who's kind of about the closest thing to Oscar Peterson you could imagine. And he's a great pianist. And George Klaibin, the owner of the label, came up with this idea of an Oscar Peterson legacy big band. So he picked two arrangers, myself and a very fine arranger from Germany named Kuno Schmidt, who does a lot of work for TV and for singers and for big bands Germany, and we split writing a record of Oscar Peterson influenced music. So I just did a huge 15-minute arrangement of West Side Story based on Oscar's West Side Story record, which is one of my favorite records. Then I arranged an Oscar Peterson very beautiful song called Hymn to Freedom, and then we combined that with Battle Hymn of the Republic, which is not really an Oscar Peterson tune, but it was really popularized by Monty Alexander, who was probably one of Oscar's most important proteges. And we did some other Oscar Peterson tunes, and this record is coming out in the spring, and we're doing some tours in Europe and hopefully in the United States with it.
Well, how exciting. Maybe there'll be a chance to come back to Durham and the Triangle.
Well, I would love an excuse. I would love to come back to Duke and do something with the jazz program there. But, you know, that would be really fun. I haven't been back in a while.
Yeah.
I got to get some hush puppies.
And
the right kind of barbecue. You can't get that in California. You can't get North Carolina food in California at all. I miss it.
Oh, boy.
I want to go to Bullock's so badly.
Bullock's in Durham. It's still here.
I know.
It's still here. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Bill, I so appreciate that you're taking the time to talk with us this evening, and I think we ought to make sure to play one of your compositions here, and I think probably of the two of them, the most appropriate one, considering the connection here, would be Mary Lou's Blues.
There you go.
Any stories to tell us about that one?
Yes, actually, she taught me a tune called Free Spirit. And it's one of her songs off of one of her albums. And it's very beautiful.
Mm.
And it's very slow and bluesy and lovely.
Yes.
And I kind of took a couple of those voicings that she had and wrote a song around it. So that's Mary Lou's Blues is kind of an altered, kind of a spaced out blues, and it's definitely kind of coming from Mary Lou's spirit, and I'm just so grateful to have had the opportunity to work with her.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. And that is a great way to end your CD as well.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah. Well, again, many, many thanks to you, Bill Cunliffe, calling us from California, and we've enjoyed getting to talk with you about The Blues and the Abstract Truth, Take 2, out on Resonance Records. You can find out more about Bill's music at BillCunliffe.com. Perhaps we'll get a chance to hear that next album you spoke of.
That'll be out very soon, and I keep busy. There's no, what was that, no moss under my shoes, or whatever the expression.
Well, that's wonderful.
It's music is fun. I enjoy it, and I can't wait to hear. I've heard some of your things, but I've only heard them on the website, so I'm looking forward to hearing your stuff as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, again, greatly appreciate your time, and we're going to segue here into Bill Cunliffe's composition, Mary Lou's Blues.